Well, good morning. This is Jim with the Keys Bartender Podcast. I recall that for all these years, I say, this is Jim, the Keys Bartender. I guess I'm the host of the Keys Bartender, because in the beginning, when I said all these things, I said I wanted to give off the air that I'm a Keys Bartender, not the Keys Bartender. But when it comes to the podcast, I guess I am the Keys Bartender, meaning I'm not the only one, but I'm the only one who's host of the Keys Bartender podcast, a podcast about bartending and life in the Keys. Now that we got these issues settled, let's get on with the podcast. Well, we are now in a new phase with the place where I'm working, that the new restaurant is now open. The Crooked Palm Cabana in Tavernier. It is, just like any other startup or new restaurant, it's going to be popular for a while. Just on that concept of being a new place as its own, and whether it is successful, that is up to us. But according to the skill I see of the people around there, the people, the efforts they put in, the quality of the build of the building, and the processes they put into building this restaurant and creating cocktails and the food and all that, they should be successful. I don't want to be these people that just have a false sense of what you call assurance in success. But it should be successful because they put a high level of requirements into the building, the way the menu is developed, and things like similar, all the things that go into making a great restaurant. You know, the personalities involved, the location, the investment in equipment. So I'm looking forward to it. So now I'm working in one company at two places, which is ideal. Ideal for me. It keeps me. What is going on? It's like my brain is on some kind of feedback loop. It keeps me on my toes. So I work at the Amerada Brewery and Distillery in Amerada a couple days a week. I work about a 60-40 mix, which is perfectly. That's what I said to one of the owners. Says ideally, they go, would you rather work at the new place we have, the Crooked Palm Cabana, or at the place you started, the Amerada Brewery and Distillery? I said, I like both of them. I like both of them. I like the idea of not getting too, I guess, belabored every day, getting up and doing the same thing. It's like doing a workout routine. I do have a consistency for that. I just do the same thing. But what happens in the gym when some equipment is being used and it's too busy in there, I'll tend to have a tendency to try a new exercise. I'll throw in new exercises, and that's the way I keep things fresh. I like to think I can keep things fresh, especially when you get older. You have to really be careful not falling into these consistencies of behavior, thought, expectations when you're working. You know, upping your skill levels, diversifying your skill levels, very important, so you don't get locked in. I always had a way of making some of the biggest traditional cocktails, which are martinis, Manhattans, old fashioned, which is, there's always a discrepancy in how people, they call it, I'll have an old fashioned or I'll have an old fashioned. Sounds past tense. Well, they both work. I always explain to people when they come up to the bar, especially in this tourist location, that when people ask me questions like, how do you pronounce the name of the town we are in right then. And it was Isla Morada. Isla Morada. That's how the locals pronounce it. But if you're Spanish, it's Isla Morada. Okay. And if you are not familiar with how to pronounce it, they may call it Islam Morada. Now, I'm not going to say all of them are correct, but all of them relay an essential piece of information of what you're trying to say. It's like if you don't realize that they're trying to say the name of your town, I don't see the importance of trying to correct someone. It says, well, this is a way to correctly pronounce it, but if you say it the way you're saying it, people will understand. It's really no big deal because that's all language is for, communicating an idea. So we have an aquatic creature down here called the conch. We call it the conch. It's spelled conch, and the rest of the world spell say conch, but in this part of the world, this local part of the world, I'm saying local, real local, not region, it's called conch. Conch, and they pronounce it similar to spelling of conk. But when someone says, I'll have conch fritters, I know exactly what they mean. And I don't feel the need to have to correct them. When someone asks for an old fashioned or an old fashioned, I know they mean the one drink. They just pronounce it differently. Or the way my wife says, she is used to, English is her second language, though she's very good at. With using the language, she's fluent in two languages and she does very well with them. I understand what she's trying to say. So if she wants to say, would you like to have a strawberry, and forgets to, would you like to have strawberry, instead of saying, would you like some strawberries, because of the ever varying rules on pluralization of the English language, like fish versus fishes. And it gets rather confusing because fishes, if you're talking about different types of fish, maybe we have the night of the seven fishes, not the night of the seven fish. If you had seven goldfish, or you had seven types of fishes. And even then, you can just say seven types of fish. So it's kind of confusing, isn't it? So correcting everyone that comes up to the bar and say, telling people, well, this is how it's correctly announced. When someone orders a martini, he says, well, listen, you're ordering a martini. And for an old bartender like myself, a martini is gin and light dry vermouth. But to a newer bartender, a martini could be almost anything. A range of cocktails, it only denotes the type of glass that it goes into, a martini glass, unless you're ordering it on the rocks. So the need to be right about the formality, about things going on, you have to be consistent, obviously, in the work environment. You want to be consistent on drinks and your output, your quality output, your service output. But there is an over coverage, an overall importance is getting the message across. So when someone orders a old fashioned or a Manhattan, that's what they mean. But if you have a certain menu item that says, I'll have a different name for it. Let's say you work at a restaurant where you call it something else, a Higgins Old Fashioned. That could just be the style of the drink, or it could be made with a Higgins name product or a Higgins branded product, or the way Higgins makes it. But if someone orders a martini or an old fashioned or a Manhattan. It generally goes with, oh, you want a traditional old fashioned, you want a traditional Manhattan, you want a traditional martini. Would you like it to be gin or vodka? And that's the only question you have to ask. Schooling someone and having the importance of showing, and I am been guilty of this many times, to show people, well, I know exactly what I'm doing. And I want to show you that what you've asked is incomplete. And I, being so much more experienced than you are in this field, need to show you the depth and breadth of my knowledge. Well, it's not always important. Not always important to do that. The most important thing is to get out the exchange of communication, what that person wants. This past week, and I have to call myself out, I was called rude by a customer. It was a party we were doing, and it was a party bus. It was a rehearsal dinner, a rehearsal event. People were having a wedding in Amarada, and they all came off the bus. And I was kind of torn. I obviously, I'm not torn in my desire to deliver fast and prompt and thorough service, but I'm torn between how to make it happen when about 70, 80 people arrive at one time at a bar where it's, let's say, a tab bar, but they're running one tab and you have to record each drink and you have to serve the people. I was given a little help to serve them, but what I realized I had to provide a lion's share of the cocktails to people and knock down that crowd as much as possible, quick, because when a party starts, you don't want to spend a half hour getting the initial drink out. You want to get that out in 10 minutes to get a libation in someone's hand as quick as possible. And sometimes, in order to do that, especially when you open the doors or they all arrive at the same time, is you have to be succinct and quick. And part of that is in the ordering process. And that's where the patrons and the guests have a crucial role to play. So I had people coming in and they weren't sure what they wanted to have. And I had to kind of slot them into two places. It's, I wanted people that were ready to order to come up to the bar and people that weren't ready to order. And it wasn't that it was true. I didn't have time to really tell the people that weren't this, didn't make their decision yet. I wanted them to know that I'm going to get to you, but you're going to have to think a little more. You're going to have to do some work for me. So what I did is I said, hey, listen, excuse me. I say, ladies and gentlemen, can I have your attention? Everyone that's ready to order, please come up here. If you're not ready to order, stand up to the side. I didn't really have the chance to do that all the time. I had people coming up and they have 30 people behind them and they go, well, I'm not exactly sure what I want to have. And they start asking questions. And I say, ooh, if I spend 1 minute with those people, that is 1 minute of not making four or five drinks that I could have made. And that's all I'm thinking. I say, listen, the penalty for not knowing what you want when you get to the front of the line is that you're going back to the back of the line. It's almost like the soup Nazi bit in Seinfeld. No soup for you, no drink for you at this time. I didn't say that, but I didn't mean it. I'm like, yeah, the people that are going to get a drink are the people that know what they want. And that's important when you come up there and you have a busy bar. You want to make sure that you're ready. If you see the bar is busy, you want to be ready to get what you want. I know it's tough because you want to get exactly what you want when you want it. But you also have to be considerate about the other people in your group. You don't want to be that person, do you? To hold up the whole line because, well, I want what I want when I want it. It's not important. I don't concern myself with other people or concern. I understand that. I understand that, and it's important to take care of your own needs. But it's also important when you're part of a group to think of the group's needs. And let me teach you a word: consideration. You have to have consideration for other people. And then at the After you process the information, say, well, that person was so abrupt. He was just so impatient with getting the drinks. I wasn't impatient. Maybe I was channeling the impatience of the people waiting behind you. But I was, if you want to characterize it, I was impatient to be able to provide as many drinks as I can to the people as quickly as possible to get through that crowd. And if you're not ready, you sacrifice a little time that you're not going to be the first one to going to be served if you're not ready. That's the only thing. The people that are ready get things quicker. And that's what it boils down to. Be ready when you show up there. When you show up to the next person in line. Don't go and say, oh boy, look at all these choices. I don't really know what I want. But the next 10 people will know what they want. And that's what I'm concerned about. And I do apologize if it comes off as rude. But in the long run, I'm thinking about everyone. I want everyone to be served at the same time. I want them to be served in a short amount of time with as little problem as possible. And then when the line gets down, you can start doing all that stuff where you're just trying to, oh, I like to taste a little of this. I like to taste a little of that. I say that's the perfect time to do it when there's no line behind you. You can't sample everything when you got like 30 people behind you. Or you have to wait to sample everything when you got 30 people behind you. That's all I have to say for this part of the show. I'll be back in a moment. I'm back. I noticed, and I think Abby was telling me, it was last week or the week before, I was doing a show, and at the end of the show, the last, right before I signed off, or right as my sign off, I'll say, I'll be back. Well, I can say that anytime, really. Because as long as I intend to do another show, I'll be back. So just in case, if there's no other episode after, if there's no other excerpt, that just means if I say it at the end of the show, it just means I intend to do another episode, my intention. And someday, as most assuredly, someday there will be a last episode. And it might say, I'll be back. And I'm not back. And for any sort of reason, not necessarily a negative reason, meaning I'm not here, it may be over. But I don't know if I could ever, at this point, ever end it. The nice thing about it is I never really made any money with the show. So now it's not like I'm going to be any drastic. I pay for the show. I pay more to produce the show than I get from the show. And I'm not asking for any commissary with it or anything like that because it is a labor of love. I love to do it because I keep on doing it, obviously. And I complained early on, I know, about the technology, not understanding what I'm doing, not getting the what I guess in the beginning, I expected a higher listenership than I got. Which is, I imagine it's a couple thousand listeners a month. It could be more because there's a lot of platforms the show's available on, and I'm not necessarily tracking it or it's not being tracked. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I mean, it would be kind of amazing that there's a huge, let's say there's a huge group of people in the Punjab region of India. And there it's just wildly popular, the Keys Bartender. People say, this is an American show, it's amazing. And that was me trying to do a subcontinent accent. But I don't th necessarily think that's the truth. Or in a German or on Weezer, there's a Weezer app. It's called Not the Band from the 90s. But it's a German app, and obviously Spotify. I think Spotify is Italian, or what? It was, no. Spotify is from Sweden or Norway, and they just have a bigger, I guess, a bigger following. And then you have your iTunes, which is, probably the most evenly distributed one. So As we're talking about technology, I was kind of a little late. I was a little late in the adoption of the in the podcasting game, but now I guess I'm a having, going into my 8th year and towards my 900th episode. Probably by the end of this year, I'll be working well into the 900, and next year I'll be on my 1,000th episode, which is a long running show, I imagine. For I mean, I know there's other ones out there that have done just as many, but I try to keep it that way, and I try to keep it au courant, au courant. And what I've noticed in, I was going to say in the last 7 years, but it's been going on more recently. From the 80s to the 90s, technological change happened more incrementally. I imagine for hundreds of years before then, it was incremental over decades. Technology didn't change that drastically, but it's occurring so quickly nowadays. Matter of fact, I've done, where I'm, you don't know what exactly is, when you read a news item, and you hear something, a new scientific discovery. Is this a discovery they've been working on for a long time? Or is this something that just burst on the scientific scene? There was an article about a propellant-less propulsion system, meaning there's no fuel that goes in to cause the propellant, but it's a rocket engine that produces a force without a propellant, which I really don't quite understand what they're trying to say. Because if it's producing a force that propels an engine, then the force is the propellant. So how can you call it propellant less? But I think what they're saying is there's no base fuel that is stored up with it. It's just a produced propulsion, which, is so wildly different and weird. And it's as if I did posit in a posting that I made when I reposted this article about the propellantless propulsion system, that it would give credence to the idea that, and I'm not trying to make you guys into conspiracy theorists, because you can think any wild idea that you want. And my idea was that that type of release of information with that, I didn't even know they were considering a propellant-less propulsion system, that it would give credence to the idea that there's a slow release going on of captured alien technology. I mean, you call it captured or given to us by, but about 5, 6 years ago, when hypersonic weapons were coming about, and let's say the release of unidentified aerial phenomenon, UAPs. That was a hard thing to remember because it was first, for longest time, it was UFOs, unidentified flying objects. And all that meant was there was something in the sky, and we really couldn't decide if it's a man-made one or a natural phenomenon or something other than that. That's all it means. A UFO didn't necessarily mean that it's an alien. Yeah, so you got to think of the word itself. It was unidentified, meaning you don't know what it is. So it could be any of those things. It could be a man-made object, it could be a natural phenomenon, or it could be the smallest percentage, could be alien technology. But we've always assumed, or the culture always assumed, or society at large, that UFO meant it's alien. Right? It's like when a girl says, "Well, I miss my period." You're pregnant? No, it means you missed your period. That's what it means first. And there's all these other things that could happen. It could mean your menstrual cycle's been interrupted. Okay. So jumping to conclusions. So we got the UAP, the unidentified aerial phenomenon. And th the government and military departments in the United States are starting to address and saying, yes, we did see it. There's, yes, we can't identify it. That there was an object that would do things that are, according to the laws of physics that we observe, cannot be explained, meaning changes of directions, the speed, that it would be impossible. So that just means that, and people are hear it and they say, well, that means alien. No, it doesn't. That means there's a whole wide range of things that can happen with UAP, right? There could be other agencies in the United States government that are experimenting with aircraft or the sort of technologies. That could be one. It could be another group of people. It could be private industry. It could be individuals. It could be other state actors. It could be natural phenomenon, or it could be alien technology. But you notice that was alien technology is part of a list. It is not the beginning and end of the list of explanations. But we have to give credence to it. You have to offer it as a, it's one of those things. And there's always the possibility. So that's offering possibilities, and you're hearing new things every day. It would appear as if the development, the next big thing is, well, one of the big things is artificial intelligence. And it's hanging like the sword of Damocles above our head, impending doom. We have a tendency that whenever any big changes occur, to you have to really think about, and I guess it's a responsible way of thinking, if you're going to commit to a big change or do some big change in your life, you have to be able to consider the most negative consequence that could affect you. Because the most positive consequence, you don't really have to prepare for, do you? If it's a positive consequence, you're preparing for success. Well, success has a way of taking care of itself. It's failure that you really need to take into account. So that's where, when they're describing AI, the worst thing that happens is that alien intelligence that we developed, we used to call it alien, it's an alien intelligence because it's intelligence developed by man, but it becomes alien from man, meaning separate from man, because of it being different. Not the same, not the same relatable ideas. So, yeah, you can consider that. It's going to happen. The genie's going to get out of the bottle, meaning they're, whatever people say, well, we're going to do it, develop it, but we're going to make sure that it's going to be reasonable. Well, you really can't guarantee that, can you? They didn't do it with the development of the nuclear weapon. If you've seen, I knew this from my history classes, and I didn't know how they would emphasize it in the movie Oppenheimer, which I thought was a really good movie. But when General Groves, the military leader of the Manhattan Project, was talking to Oppenheimer, Professor Oppenheimer, about the development of atomic weapons, there was Groves asked him, well, what's this about the one of the potential negative results, and that would be the incineration of our atmosphere. And Oppenheimer says, oh, yes, there are people that are concerned about that. And there is a possibility, remote, very remote. And Groves goes, boy, I mean, so, but you know, it's not going to happen. He goes, well, it's still a remote possibility, though, however, unlikely. You always have to do that. It's just like the pharmaceutical things we always talk about. When you see a advertisement for a pharmaceutical, they do studies, wide-ranging studies, and if there's a negative side effect that occurs in one or two of the test subjects, or one a test subject, they have to mention it as a possible side effect, even though that side effect may have nothing to do with the drugs. It's still potential, though unlikely. Does that mean we shouldn't develop it? You know, the nuclear weapon, they did the atomic weapons. People said, well, why did we develop it? And he says, well, because there were, you got to really consider this. The Nazis and the Japanese, to a much smaller part, were working on their own atomic weapons project. And I imagine that if they did it, that there would be a certainly negative consequences for us. But you can think of all. Wait, let me talk to Abby. Hey, honey. Hello? Hello? Okay. I'm trying to answer my phone. I'm like, man, my watch is loud. It's technology. But the technology that's coming around the loop, I don't know if we're ready for it. If it's stuff that's coming around the corner, we're not ready for it. The longevity, the eventually AI is probably going to do something with the, there's going to be dramatic cures in the medical field. I think there'd probably be big gains in CRISPR technology where they do a lot of gene editing. We're going to be able to cure things at the root of the problem, right inside the cell where things develop, and cure them at the base. It's like putting out a fire by hitting the source of the fire, not the fire itself. So we got some exciting things coming along the line. I think we should be ready for it. There's not a lot you could do preparing for the worst. Just like that thing with the atomic weapons. If they tested the atomic bomb and it incinerated the atmosphere, there's not much you would have had to prepare for because it would have been over, game over then. So we'll find out if it's going to be like Terminator or like a bright future with AI is solving all our problems. But hopefully man won't fuck it up. Well, that's all I have to say today. I will be back again on another day now that we got that clear. Bye.